Hello and welcome to the TikTok Six Nations Review Podcast. It's a week later than originally planned. As you can tell, I'm still recovering from COVID. My name is Port Kelly. This is the second row. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, all those places as the second row. That's 2ND, not the word second. And with me, I'm joined by Alva Nolan or Alva Ni Nulan, which you prefer, Alva?
It's Alva O'Nolan.
Alva, sorry.
No problem.
Alva, tell everyone about yourself before we get into this quickly.
Well, I suppose my interest in rugby started playing years ago, and I retired through injury a good few years ago, a little bit early. And I've just been a fan of women's rugby ever since. Back in the days when we used to trudge through the muck in Ashburn, all the way up to today. And last year, myself and a friend, Carly, we formed the Irish Women's Rugby Supporters Club. It's the Twitter, Instagram, Facebook page where we got a bit of following from other rugby fans, other women's rugby fans. We suppose we support the women's international team and women's rugby in general in the country. And we, I suppose, we've become advocates for women's rugby as well, kind of accidentally over the last year or so. But yeah, mainly fans of the game.
Very much the voiceless at times on Twitter.
Sometimes, yeah, we found people tend to come to us and, you know, lots of DMs with problems. And we've seen them ourselves over the years, both playing, coaching, reffing, doing all sorts of things. We've seen a lot of it and experienced a lot of it ourselves. So, you know, when people come to us and we say, oh, my God, it wasn't just me, we kind of were happy to speak up and speak out and I suppose, tackle those problems and create a bit of a furore. We've become a sort of part-time anarchists sometimes.
That's for sure. And with us is Claire Malloy, who I've been following on Twitter for a while because she knows our rugby and she's with us to talk about the Six Nations. How, Claire, tell everyone about yourself so people can know you before we start talking.
Yeah, so I'm sort of relatively new to rugby, only really the past maybe five years. I started properly getting into rugby. Tweet every sort of match that would be on, try to get every match, watch it, tweet sort of nonsense about it. And that's, I play rugby for Randallstown up in Northern Ireland. So it was actually the coach, Nick, of Randallstown contacted me on Twitter and asked me would I be interested in coming down, because obviously any woman that plays rugby knows that there's not massive, massive turnout for women's rugby. So joined, I'd never played rugby, I'd never even thought about playing rugby. Joined about a year ago now, and honestly, I absolutely love it. And just through watching matches, started off sort of the usual watching men's matches, and it's only been the past maybe year and a half that I've probably started getting into women's rugby as well. And sort of, I think since I started playing, seeing the challenges and difficulties that comes with playing and supporting women's rugby, you get to see it more firsthand. Maybe you're on the ground, you think, well, there's a bit of an imbalance here somewhere. But yeah, just absolutely love it. I think best sport going.
And you were playing Sunday, weren't you? Yesterday, Sunday.
Yes, I was playing yesterday. We lost, we got beat, but my little glory moment to score two forward tries or two pick and go. So,
oh, nice.
So I played 8 yesterday and then a little bit of 12. So all over the place, but well, absolutely love it. So don't ask to see my legs or any part of me that's not covered, because it's just black and blue at the minute.
Oh, I remember that so well.
Yeah, it's a Monday morning pain. You wake out of bed and you think, oh.
There's a club in Galway, Boys Club. They do a bruises of the match section where everyone who's injured gets a photo taken and they put it on their social media after every week.
Nice.
I would love that.
So before we get cracking into the games, we'll talk about the women's rugby news over the last 2 weeks, because I've been bringing all this all together. I think we start with the biggest thing for Ireland anyway, is that Munster withdrawing the motion to recognise women's AL clubs as senior. Elva, we'll start with you. You're the Munster voice from memory.
the anarchist somewhat. Yeah. So I suppose I'd heard about this motion a few months ago, and it was, It was obviously, you know, to bring in equality for the men's and the women's team in terms of their status within the AIL and how to become senior clubs, the voting rights and the financial benefits that come with that. It's something that started in Leinster. It's something that started with Railway Union, who many years ago, I think it was about 7 years ago at this point, were pushing for just that. And it was unheard of in the country. Only men's teams could become a senior team and therefore get additional voting rights. I think they have 6 votes as opposed to 1 or 2 for junior clubs, maybe 3, depending on the club and all that goes with it. And then they get extra ticket allocation and they sell those tickets. They sell them to either club members, they can sell them externally, they can gift them to the likes of sponsors, for example. So it's all given to them by the IRFU for them to generate revenue. So obviously the more tickets, the more revenue and greater things they can do within their club. Railway pushed for it and pushed for it and pushed for it. And Leinster pushed back for a considerably long time. I'd seen the wording of the laws or the governance of it years ago. And I think the argument to exclude the women's team in Railway was an argument around the facilities that they have, whether they had enough facilities and they had, you know, structures for strength and conditioning, certain level of coaching in place, a whole remit of different things like that. And the argument was that they didn't have that. But the laws at the time never stated you have to have these. It was more of an understanding. So, of course, if by the letter of the law, you can be a senior team, Railway pushed. And eventually, I think it was only last year, early last year, March, I think,
yeah,
they became that senior club very recently and very quickly enough. Connacht and Ulster, I believe, followed suit. I'm not too sure on the timeline of those, but Munster are the ones who were dragging their feet on it.
Seems to me, by my reckoning, is that Munster branch wanted to go ahead. It's just the clubs almost fighting against it. The horse trading hasn't gone through well enough.
Yeah, and the horse trading seemed to be going well enough. So I think some of the information went out to clubs back in October, and the clubs didn't seem to have an issue back then, from what I'm hearing anyway. They didn't seem to have an issue. There was no proposed amendments. There was no proposed change in wording. All seemed to be going great. And then all of a sudden, in the last week, things started to turn. And I think it might have been because the media got hold of what was going on. We saw it in the papers last week. And then all of a sudden, it seemed that a lot of the clubs might have got cold feet. And the reason they seem to have gotten cold feet, and I've heard this from a number of sources, not from the clubs themselves, I must say, is that they thought that their voting rights would be diluted, because obviously more and more clubs can become senior clubs. And therefore their power would be diminished. And also there's a finite number of tickets that can be given out. So that would be limited as well. So I think they all got cold feet and they thought, you know what, women being equal to men or revenue. And they just went to look after themselves. They all closed ranks. Sounds like they've all been in touch with each other. And this got back to the Munster branch, and the Munster branch thought, listen, I think we better pull it all together instead of losing a vote. You know, it would be an embarrassment for them to propose this, for it to have gone through all sorts of different stages and for it then to fall at the final hurdle. So they pulled it and they're hoping to vote on it in June, with a view to changing it, I would assume, or reassuring people. That I don't know, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens in June. But it just sounds like it was a bit of a farce. Everybody was dragged out to Nina on the day to be told there's no vote happening. So bitterly disappointing, particularly for a lot of the junior clubs and some senior clubs who were in support of this. And of course, particularly for Ballincollig, who are the immediate club that would be impacted by it. So a huge disappointment all around. But I suppose, like you said, horse trading needs to be done, and that needs to be done and done properly by June.
it's a shame it wasn't done properly in that meantime. I'd say for Munster, I'd almost see, I'm the type of person who go like, let's put it to a vote and ye can be embarrassed by not putting it through. We want this.
Yeah. I think it should have been put to a vote. And I know it's embarrassing to propose and to second a motion and to see it fall on its face, but at least you have it in writing. You know,
and at least you can stand by your convictions. That's quite exactly. I'd see it.
There's a number of senior clubs that, you know, we can't identify them. We don't know who they are. And, you know, whatever about us or the media, it's the members in those clubs. If I was a member of a club that decided, no, tickets matter more, I would be fuming. I would be marching into whoever's office or ringing whoever on the phone and saying, this isn't good enough. I want an explanation. And, you know, I think it's important for those members to know. Transparency is important.
And that has impacts on the whole next generation of players. And like, speaking of which, today the first ever Irish under-18 squad for women was announced for the tournament in Edinburgh. That's a great signal for where women's rugby is going in Ireland. Finally, an actual under-grade international team.
Mm-hmm. It's brilliant. I mean, and we're seeing, like, Munster announced just last week, or that they had the Senior Cups finals, and you know, we seem to take two steps forward and one step backwards all the time. And the two step forwards are great and are hard earned and takes a lot of work and probably a little bit behind time, but it's great. But then the one that's backwards seems to be, it just seems to be complacency, or it seems to be a lack of caring with women's rugby, or it seems to be concerned that, you know, men's is more important and the women is just a sideshow. So it's deeply disappointing.
Then the other kind of big news in women's rugby internationally is there's some big coaching changes happened at international level. The Welsh women have hired three more professional coaches. And I mean professional coaches, these guys have come from Bath and Saracens. Like, these are professional setups. And you bring them into your professional setup, you're only going to improve your team. And the Black Ferns have brought in Wayne Smith as a technical coach. You know, he's only won two World Cups as a men's senior coach. That's just a sign of how good England and France have been, that they felt the need to bring in a coach of his caliber.
It shows there is a push in women's rugby that people do want it to move forward and that they are making the right steps. But as you said, it is always seems to be, in a lot of places, two steps forward, one back. But with what Wales are doing, and like, it's not just standard coaches, these are big guys coming in to help out, and you know, they're big names attached to clubs and attached to women's rugby now as well.
Absolutely. And you know, these guys don't come cheap. That experience doesn't come cheap. This is a sign of real investment. They're taking it seriously. And I think it's great to see. I don't foresee us doing it anytime soon, but I think, you know, that's where the bar is, and the bar is going to go up and up and up. And it's brilliant to see finally that people are taking it so seriously. I'd hope that it's not just in time for the World Cup that they're taking these things seriously. And I'd hope it's not just off the back of a lot of hard-fought campaigning and errors, and those errors coming out in the media. I know you probably know yourselves, Alice Soper in New Zealand. She is an incredible campaigner for women's rugby over there, and she's done huge things, you know, putting her neck on the line a lot in terms of, you know, being the voice, being the person to shout the loudest over there. But I think there's an element of cynicism that comes from me, and I'm sure she shares it, that, you know, bringing somebody in the year before a World Cup, why couldn't it have been done at the end of the last cycle? Will they be retained, you know, after the World Cup? I certainly would hope so, but I think it's definitely improvement. Let's just hope it keeps going.
I'd say if you were in the part of the Black Ferns setup, you're paying for players, and then you're seeing how good England and France have been this Six Nations, and you saw the results during the last November series, you're like, actually, we, even for the Black Ferns, even for the short term, having someone like Wayne Smith in is very much a World Cup focus, but Wales seems to be putting in big blocks for their system going forward. I think a lot of countries have to do, you know, what have to just make what fits at the time fit for them, and then or about other things. Ireland are on the biggest restructure of all, so we can't really throw too many stones at glass houses at the moment. Yeah. I wanted to ask, because I watched it over the weekend, the week before last. Have you seen No Woman, No Try?
Yes, it was brilliant.
Have you seen it, Claire?
Fantastic. Yeah.
Someone like you coming into the game, especially playing more recently, how does that resonate with you?
You can see the difficulties, you can see sort of the challenges, issues that you face sort of in women's rugby, but to have somebody speak out and a big name speak out, it's massive. It's massive for women coming up through rugby, and you are noticing more people even the last couple of weeks. Since it came out, more people inquiring about rugby, more people taking an interest in women's rugby, and not just look at the stats for the Six Nations, the Women's Six Nations, the attendance. It's record breaking every single week. And you think, you know, do they go hand in hand? They might not, but it didn't do it any harm, in my opinion. I think it was amazing.
Some of the stories are great.
Oh, stories are amazing. I think the stories, to be honest, I don't know, Claire, if you've kind of any sense of that, but some of the stories just sounded so familiar to me that it just felt like my experience of rugby being told on screen by completely different people who've gone through the same thing in other countries even. It's definitely a mirror being held up, and it's a story being well told.
Yeah, absolutely.
Delighted to see it being documented, to be honest. It's great to have it out there and to have that record of, you know, what people go through and what difficulties women's teams face. I thought the story that Stephanie had about, you know, the rugby shorts and why she started her company, but was talking about, you know, the men just saying, oh, you know, get a pair of shorts that and just work out what size will fit you. And then kind of turning it back on them, going, why don't we just get women's shorts and the men can just pick whatever size fits them? And the answer was, well, that'd be ridiculous. And I could just imagine the slow clap of going, exactly, that's why it's ridiculous. But, you know, it's that naivety, I think, that there's a lot of people out there that just don't get it until it's kind of turned on its head like that. You know, you wouldn't expect that of the men, so I expected of the women. And I think that's a tale as old as time in women's rugby and women's sport and probably women's lives. It's a great movie, really good.
No, it's definitely one I would recommend everyone to watch. If you haven't seen it, do, and just reach out and tell Victoria Rush you've seen it and say how good it is and get that no try trending so more people see it and just keep that voice going. Do you want to talk about some rugby? Do you want to talk some actual rugby and enjoy?
We did have some
actual rugby. Yeah. We'll go straight to France, Ireland. We won't talk about week one. Games happened. We lost. And let's talk about the most recent loss. So France are good at rugby.
Pretty happy at it, all right, yeah.
Claire, what stood out for you most about how Ireland played? Like, we can talk about France until the cows come home, because I think really for us we got focused on Ireland for the short term.
For me, sort of my massive take from it was Ireland's penalty count. What was it? I think I read somewhere 26-0 penalty count wise in the first half. Like that's
I think that was errors. I think the penalty count was lower. I think the handling error was 27. Yeah, 27.
Oh, okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah. I think penalties, was it 12, 16? I can't remember.
12, pretty sure.
12,
yeah. Was it, yeah?
Yeah, which is high enough still to give away that many penalties. I think it was 16 in the Welsh game, so, I mean, it's somewhat of an improvement, but it's still not great. But, yeah, Claire, those handling errors, 27 handling errors.
Yeah.
That's 27 times you've handed up, is it, or handed the ball back to the other team. Yeah,
and with a team like France, you can't afford to be making any mistakes against a team like France, but you can't afford to be making that many.
No, certainly not,
because you're getting punished, and it showed that Ireland massively got punished for it.
I think
it came from like a power game from France, how they were just able to be more powerful than Ireland across the pitch.
Yeah, I think France have an interesting game plan. I think they're very much like a mix of England and Italy in that they have the elements of chaos that Italy bring and kind of beautiful chaos, and then they have the structure from England where they're clearly well drilled, well practiced, well able to read a game. I think they identified really early that to disrupt Ireland, just get in their faces. And it showed like, and that's where those handling errors come from, that there was suddenly somebody in their face. As soon as they catch a ball, they're either about to be smashed or they're being smashed. So, or there's even that fear that they are going to be smashed, and therefore they take their eye off the ball. Ball spills, and that's it. Scrum time again. And of course, as soon as we spill the ball and there's a scrum, the front row are suffering. So yeah, tough old game for them. I think a lot of it comes from a lack of game time at that level. I think, the AIL just isn't at the level that, rugby's been played in France and England in their leagues. So I think, yeah, it's a step up, and with that step up comes a lot of naivety, and we're a very inexperienced side as well. I think our most experienced cap is now 25 caps on that pitch
Emer
with Emer
Constantine is one of those
Constantine.
senior players, yeah.
Yeah, I think she's up to 25 caps now after that game, and that's not in the world of rugby, that's not a lot of caps. I mean, we
No.
don't all expect them to be Alan Wynne-Jones with 150 plus, but at the same time, you'd expect to have some players with 60, 70 caps in there, and we just don't. So I think, it reflects, our naivety, our inexperience, but I hope in time that experience will come. And we'll certainly learn from it.
For me, at times we attack like a sevens team. I don't mean to sound that like as a bad thing. It's just you can tell how, say, even take Aveen Riley as an example, scrum half has a very good pass, but you can so tell she's used to throwing that pass that can be wild because the next person's going to have that bit more time.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And I think, we do have a lot of sevens in the side, the back three are all sevens. I think that element definitely adds something to their game. I think though that they're used to, like you said, they're used to more space, they're used to more time on the ball. You see in sevens that they can just hammer on the brakes, look left, look right, and kind of decide where they're going to go. You just don't have that time in 15s, and you certainly don't have that time against France.
Even if Emily Murphy Crowe can step half the French team on her own at times.
Yeah.
On her own. In a phone booth with people on top of her, and she's still step random. Amazing. What about Sam Monaghan's offload though? Again. Oh, they're a thing of beauty, aren't they?
She
You just watch
her
it on loop.
Yeah.
her nickname is actually Sammy
Sammy
Bill
Bill. Yeah,
in
Sammy
Camp
Bill.
Down.
Oh, incredible stuff. And I wonder, does that element of her game and her confidence come with playing in the Premier 15s? She seems to be full of confidence when she's in midfield. She takes on the ball. As soon as there's contact there, her head's on swivel looking for somebody to pass it to. And it's wonderful to see, lovely to see somebody on her shoulder every time as well, because they know it's coming.
It does look like the team is set up in a way to attack like that, though, to attack quite in a good term, loosely, trying to create an offload, trying to create mismatches. But the problem is, it's like you said, that lack of caps. But when that's not working, we don't kick the ball. Like, I
This is
think
true.
all our kicks combined didn't get into hit 20 as a team.
And I had what I heard was that they were looking for that kind of a game plan, was keep France in their half, keep France in their 22. Make them work to get to our try line, make them work hard, because our defence previous week was really, really good for the first 70 minutes. So, I mean, that kind of a game plan in a simple terms would work. But we didn't kick enough. We didn't use it enough. I suppose we didn't have the ball in hand long enough to get, our foot on it. So, yeah, it's a real pity. I mean, I think in terms of our approach to this competition, though, however badly we're losing, I'm relatively okay with it. And that just sounds a bit odd. And the reason I say this is because all of the teams that are in the competition, bar us, are working up to a World Cup next year. We're not. You know, there's we have an opportunity that they don't have. We can play fast and loose. We can throw new players in there. God, we could stick Linda Dugang at 10 for all I care. Try, you know. And you know what? I wouldn't be against that.
I'm quite liking that idea, actually.
Yeah, I think Clara and put her across 1 to 15. But anyway, I think we should try new things. I think we should go with an inexperienced side. I think we should put them in the deep end and make them learn the hard graft that is international rugby against, you know, the third best team and the first team in the world. Why not do that now, when next year we can just keep going and build and build and build? You know, they're going to have 3 years between World Cup cycles. We're going to have four. We have that additional year. Do you know what? Let's be risky. Let's play fast and loose. Let's learn our trade. Let's learn what our team's capable of and build a strategy around that. You know, I've got no problem with that. And I think, you know, if we were going into a World Cup next year, I'd be crying my eyes out. Right now, I'm just going, let's have the crack. Let's blood those new players and see what we can do.
Yeah, it does feel when you're watching this Six Nations, especially, that we are in a different place as a team. And you can almost see how, like you're saying, how we're playing feels like that. We're not playing for World Cup next year. We're playing to get the best out of the players we have as individuals. Mm-hmm. I think you can actually say each individual is playing well. It's just almost sitting into the system and structure isn't working. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you on that. Yeah.
I don't think anyone's playing had a bad game. You know, would you put anyone under a 5 out of 10 or a 6 out of 10 for performance level?
No, I don't think so. And I think they're all showing a lot of passion, but I think, like we said, you know, there's that inexperience and it's a hell of a steep learning curve. But yeah, that they are performing. I think if we saw us retain the ball, we would do so much more and we'd do so much better. You know, our try against France was a sensational try. Yeah. It was a proper team try. We saw the forwards carrying. We saw the backs stepping, moving into space, running their overs, running their unders. We went from one side of the pitch to the other. You know, once we got that bit of cohesion and kept the ball in hand, we could do something with it. And we really could. So I suppose it's a matter of building on that, for me anyway. What was your favourite moment of the match, guys?
You know, it's probably a little bit controversial, but it was the French picking up Niamh Jones. And I was like, you know what, Niamh, just power through.
Yeah.
Go for it. I mean, I wanted her to go down safely, and she did. So I was happy enough with that. But I was like, it just shows the physicality of the French squad.
Yeah. I'd say they get out of bed in the morning and they lift the bed 10 times before they leave the room.
100%, yeah.
They're physical women and they lift everything in sight. They're really capable.
I know it was against us, but I just enjoyed watching the French scrum. I like watching a good scrum.
Yeah.
You know, it's
definitely a very powerful element.
But it's technical as well. Like last week against Wales, we were beat in power terms. Whereas I think this week it was more the technical terms. I think that's an issue for Ireland. Our set piece in general needs, I think we need a set piece coach. Someone like specifically, like Paul O'Connell does for the men, come in and refine our set piece. Because this is a scrum nerd in me now. If you watch how Ireland set up, we're actually about an inch or two too high. When the two shoulders connect, the opposition team seem to be always underneath us from the get-go.
And I see, I didn't get to read it, but I saw comments about it. Cliona Maloney, who of course has been left out of the side, I think she's written a piece and she points to that exactly, that we're too high. And you could see that we were too high, that we were, you know, our shoulders are being rounded off in the front row, and straight away that just weakens us. You got to have that flat back. You got to get those hips down. You got to get your right angles between your, you know, ankle, knee, hip. Mm-hmm. Find that solid base. But we weren't quite there yet. But yeah, I think a scrum coach would be good to come in. I know we had Mike Ross in there a few years ago. I remember seeing him walking up and down the sideline in the Energia, but great to have somebody like that, somebody who's really technical, somebody who can teach them the dark arts, you know.
But it does need that kind of very nerdy sense, because even the line out, we have some lovely moves, but we're not quite fluid enough and it's easily read then. And
yeah,
that's almost not having the time to do the reps.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Yeah, it definitely reads like that, that we know what we're supposed to do. We're just not, you know, executing it accurately enough, and muscle memory probably isn't there.
But, you know, you lose 40 points to 5 and you look through the stats, you kind of, they don't make sense.
No,
they don't make sense at all. I read through the stats afterwards and went, nah, that can't be true. 50% possession?
It seems to be a lot of middle park possession, and France are supremely clinical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't waste that ball.
Give them a sniff of the try line from anywhere.
They try things. You know, they don't waste much at all. They will stretch a defense so well. Yeah, they're far more clinical, and you see that with England and with probably Wales a bit more now as well, and France, is that they're just well drilled. They know where they're supposed to be in the park. They know how to react as a unit to what's in front of them. You know, I think we're, like you've kind of pointed to, that we're playing as individuals and playing well, but we're not just playing as that unit. But yeah, some of the technical things we could do so much better. But I think, you know, if we were a semi-professional side and we had 4 hours a day to spend on a pitch, would we be doing them really well? Absolutely. Absolutely. Just need to get them paid.
And speaking of a team that is going through those kind of hours a day that they weren't doing before, Wales beat Scotland 24-19. Like, let's be honest, this was the game of the weekend, wasn't it, Claire?
The last 20 minutes of the game, fantastic. If it's a new person coming into women's rugby and wanted to give women's rugby sort of a shot, really, that was the game that set it all on. It was incredible. Just, it was a kind of game you didn't know what was going to happen. The knock-on, was it a knock-on, was it a no-knock-on?
Yeah.
It was just fantastic. What a game.
That's proper old-school rugby they seem to be playing, isn't it? They're just, I kept using the word trust. Like, they just have faith in themselves to go that 80 minutes, and that the system that they have in place will grind out that win. And they've proven it twice. They've come from behind, significantly from behind twice. Oh, it's all of the jersey kind of stuff. I love it.
You have to admire that fitness they have, though, because they just don't seem to tire. It's just continuous.
Yeah, they're a machine. Claire, I'm sure you were like that on Sunday, were you?
No, I got 20 minutes in. I thought, what am I doing? Why am I here again?
It is just exhausting, especially for you know, a pack. Just, you know, you get to 60, 70 minutes and you must be exhausted. And particularly, like, their pack does a lot of work. You know, they run a lot of malls. That's exhausting stuff to do. But they do it very well, don't they?
Yeah, they're clinical. The way they do it, everything just seems to flow. They have sort of what Ireland don't have at the minute, which is just, it just flows, and it seems to work really easy for them, and everyone just gels really, really easily.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is that they're not trying to do anything fancy.
No.
You know, what we're trying to do is we're trying to get the ball around the park a bit. We're trying to mix it up in terms of how we attack, whether we go through the hands, boot to ball, although we haven't had, you know, a huge amount of options for that. We're trying to do stuff that are, it's probably little out of our reach. Yeah. Whereas Wales know where they are. They're like, let's do the line out well. Let's scrum well. Let's get the ball through the hands. Let's make sure the rucks are secure. They're just doing all of the basics well. Mm-hmm. And I think, Potter, that's what you were kind of talking about earlier, was that they're spending hours, but they're getting everything right.
That's it. And which is what surprised me actually about this game is, for the first 50 minutes, they weren't. But for some, because Scotland's maul was on top, their scrum was on top. Like, after that first half, I was like, all right, Scotland are going to just keep doing this for the second and off we go. But what they have is what England and France have, a bench that can go, okay, we're going to take it on from here and we're going to have minute one energy for the rest of this game.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And they do it so well, don't they? That bench has come on twice. I think Greg McWilliams even mentioned it after the Wales game, just saying, you know, I think he got one over on me because his bench, he really got it right. And God, they come on. I can't imagine being a forward, having run around the pitch, doing all the hard slog, and then you see their bench coming on. You just go, I'm out. Thanks. No. See you next week.
Yeah,
Jones. I've had a good run. Check out.
Jones came on for Wales there in the second half, and there was a 5-minute period where all you could see was her head coming up from a tackle or a breakdown and her back being slapped, because she was just everywhere for that 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And the sub seemed to come on and lay down a marker and mm-hmm. bring everyone else with them.
Yeah, it's amazing when you've got players that will inject that energy when they come onto the pitch. Like I think as a unit, the replacements are doing really well, and that they're all coming on, they're all doing that. Sometimes you see it that it's an individual that comes on and lifts a player. I used to call it the Damien Duff effect. Damien Duff used to come onto the pitch and he used to lift everybody with him as he'd go 100 miles an hour. But, you know, it's all of the Welsh bench are doing it. They're doing it so well.
How much did you want to give Conkle a hug, though, at the end of the game for coming
over the try line? Heart absolutely broke for her. And I love her as a player. Like, as players go, she is amazing. You know, just part-time firefighter and rugby player, you know. She's just incredible. But yeah, that's just not like her at all. Depressing. But
for me, the last 2 weeks watching Wales, you have to think the impact that professionalism has had on this team is mm-hmm. unreal. Like,
yeah,
Claire, could you imagine yourself going training every day and not having to worry about work in the evening or any of those type of things? How much easier would your life be?
It's a weight off your shoulders. It's a massive, massive weight to know you're not, it's as easy as rushing home from work, getting kids sorted, getting the house sorted, and then running out to go do a few years of training when you're already shattered from doing a full day of work. It's just, it's, to me, it's mind-boggling that in this day and age that's the way it has to be. But for the women that have got it, it's just, and it's paid off. It's shown the last 2 weeks the difference that it can make for
mm-hmm.
for the women playing.
When do the non-professional teams or non-semi-pro mm-hmm. teams, when do they review games? When do they watch footage? Like, I just, on the flight on the way over to the away games, I don't get where they get the time. It's baffling.
Sure, I was on mm-hmm. Instagram this week and I'm pretty sure I saw Nicola Friday doing her own running at her local GA pitch on her own Monday evening.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me.
So, but it's that recovery as a unit. So, like you and Claire had a game on the weekend. Imagine you like doing your sprints on your own on a pitch with your dead leg.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're there with someone who had a dodgy shoulder, you carry each other through.
Yeah.
There's an extra 5% in everyone's performance straight away.
I can't wrap my head around it. I don't think I'll ever be able to understand it. It's just the difference is night and day. Mm-hmm. And it's not, but as you said, where do you get time to review? You know, when mm-hmm. when you're cooking dinner, do you stick it on in the background and think, well, I'll listen to it to see how it went?
Yeah.
You know, you don't get the chance.
When do the time to get to go to physio? When do they have time? Just, do they sleep? They mustn't.
Yeah.
It's just baffling to see what they do. But I suppose, though, such is their level of commitment mm-hmm. to their country and to their sport.
Yeah.
Like, I suppose my fear, I don't know about you guys, my fear, and I know that has happened, and I could name a few names, that there's people who just drop off and don't play for their country anymore because they just don't have the time, or they don't have an employer that's friendly enough, or they don't have childcare or a partner that'll support it. You know, like, how do these people do it? I don't get it. And you see the difference, Miles.
Yeah, and you can't, if somebody that does drop off, you can't hold it against them, because you think, well, you know, if you're not getting supported the way that the men's getting supported, the way another country's getting supported, then how, physically, mentally, how can you do it every week? You couldn't.
I couldn't ever manage it. Not that I'd ever be good enough, but I don't think I could ever manage it. It's an insane level of commitment. These women deserve like huge rewards. I know the Wales team, I think they're only getting, I think it's about 24, 25 thousand pounds sterling for a full-time contract. It's pennies in the grand scheme of things, but at least it's rewarding them for their work. It's something that has to come in here. When it will, who knows, but God, that level of commitment, you need something back from it, not just a game of rugby and a few injuries to carry with you.
We'll go on to the England match because that's where we'll really see the impact professionals having. But I think we'll look at the England-Italy match and like going, what did Italy do? And we'll look to next week. You know, we'll do that all in one, encompassing in one, because England are just a machine. I'm genuinely worried about Ireland facing them. To see the domination they had over Italy was scary, to be honest. It was genuinely one of the scariest things I've seen, because Italy aren't a bad team.
They're not remotely a bad team. And I thought that, I don't know, if I would have guessed the scoreline, I would have said that maybe England would break 50 points, but we'd see three tries out of Italy. And the English are so ruthless and so well-versed and so clinical that we just didn't see that. You couldn't see Italy get out of the traps. And I think we don't play too dissimilar a game to Italy. I think they played better. They're a more cohesive unit. So, yeah, I fear us playing England as well. I don't want to do it. I can imagine the players don't either. I suppose we'll see next weekend, though, how we do measure up to Italy and how we might measure up to England. But, yeah, frightening scoreline.
But when you look at this statistically in that game, to say it was one-sided is, you know, it's beyond one-sided. Italy weren't even able to breathe, I think, in the whole game.
Yeah, very tough for them. Very tough.
And I know you have a great affinity for Italy, Elva.
Yeah, particularly Rigoni. She is just like, she is kind of the badass of the Italian team. She plays her own game and she does it so well. She's really creative. She has no fear. And, you know, Italy play very like her, or follow that kind of or I suppose she fits into what Italy do. Like, I was surprised Forlan wasn't starting and came off the bench. She plays that similar game. She does nothing better than to play out of her own 22. And they do it so well. They're fearless in that sense, but they just came up against something that was, you know, so far beyond them and will likely be so far beyond us. You know, I think I love watching Italy. I love watching their style of play. I love that chaos that they bring. But you can't see it against a side like England. I'm really looking forward to seeing more of Italy and more of Scotland, because I think Scotland in the game at the weekend were playing loose rugby. We're well able to put the ball through their hands. We're well able to do a few crossfield kicks and kicks into touch. And Italy can do the same. And I think that'll be, you know, their games would be really loose and really open and a joy to watch, I hope.
Italy do have that ability to vary up how they play. How do you think Ireland are going to tackle that, Claire?
It's the kind of match where I think they're probably more on par with each other than any other team in the tournament. So I do think it'll be a good match. Ireland need to keep cool heads, not going, I think, cocky, looking at the score from the Italy game as well, which, you know, on reflection with themselves, they probably won't. I don't think they will. But cool heads, I think, and just keeping ball. Don't do anything fancy. It works for other teams. Don't try it for us. Just, you know, through the hands a handful of times, keep it in the forwards, keep it in the pods, that it works. It's clear that it works. Just do it. Try it.
I think you're right, Claire. I think the best thing that we can do against Italy, like I said, they play beautiful, chaotic rugby at times. I think that they'd enjoy the chaos of it, and we don't enjoy that chaos.
Yeah.
I think keep it simple, keep it structured. If Italy are up in our face like the French were, and they'll probably identify that as a weak point, play deep. play it into pods,
yeah.
keep it nice and tight if needs be, just play our game of rugby and get more time on the ball. If we get more time on the ball, play a few phases and then go for something creative. You know, don't try and, oh, you know, we have the ball. It's a miracle we have the ball for, you know, a few minutes. Do something with it. No, be patient on it. And that's what Wales did so well, is that they're patient. They're kind of going, yeah, okay, we might have to go through 12 phases, but let's go through 12 phases. And if we do that against Italy, we don't give Italy the ball to do anything creative and to mix anything up.
Mm-hmm.
We just force them to defend against us and, you know, stick Baving Parsons in. She'll, you know, she's going to create something out of nothing. So have the patience to get the ball out to her. Have the patience to get the ball to Stacey Flood, who might spot a bit of room in behind and do something with it, you know. But you have to earn the right. You know, you talk in rugby so often about you earn the right to go wide. We're trying to go wide too early. And if you do that against Italy, you go wide, ball drops, somebody's on it and they're in.
Because Italy against France were really good up until the 5 meter line, then fluffed their lines.
Yeah, they did, whereas, didn't they?
They had no space or time to do anything like that against England whatsoever. So I think we almost have to defend like France did against us. We need to be up in Italy's face. We need to put pressure on them. Don't let them start building rhythm up. It's going to be an extremely high tempo game, but our defense, I've been really impressed with the double tackling, the physicality. Mm-hmm. We just have it for 60 minutes. So we need to be far enough ahead against Italy after 60 minutes to see, to give us a good enough chance to win. Because I think the drop-off in that last 20 has been fairly substantial the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think so too. I think, yeah, you're right. We only have a certain amount of fuel in the tank at the moment, that, and we don't have that bench to come in and lift us back up again. You know, we have a good bench, but we just don't have, we don't have the depth in certain positions. So yeah, I think you're absolutely right. We need to get up in their face. We need to wear them out. And I think you've hit the nail on the head there about not letting them find a rhythm. You know, they get comfortable with the rhythm and they get more creative and they will create something. And they will work their way up to that 5 meter line. What they do after that, who knows? But I think, yeah, get up in their face. Let them be the ones to knock the ball on. Let them be the ones to spill it, and let's see what our scrum does. Let's see if our scrum performs this week.
It needs to. It's three weeks of rugby in a row. It's going to be tough for Linda.
Yeah, especially she's moving tight head to loose head. I don't know, have you ever played front row, Claire?
No, it's somewhere I've always stayed quite a while away from it.
Yeah, same. I stood in at a match once at hooker, and yeah, no, I value my neck. Thanks. I don't know how they do it. And like,
no,
tight head is supposed to be such a technical position.
Mm-hmm.
And we're expecting Linda to go, okay, you're starting at loose head and then you move to tight head and then you actually, no, we'll go back to loose head again. How does she do it? She must be exhausted.
Yeah. She's a machine as well. She never gives up.
And to think she's doing that while living on her own savings, being a part-time translator in France.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Sinead Cassan. I was so surprised to see that interview and that she's living off her own savings. How's that like something to celebrate, you know, from the IRFU? Off you go, spend all your own money, especially, you know, in the economy we have. And she's a young woman in a career that doesn't pay a whole lot of money. Like, that's just criminal, having her spend all her money to do that. But it's a sign of the person she is. It's a sign of her love of the sport. No wonder she's such a machine. She's so determined.
Mm-hmm.
So Ireland do face Italy in Cork. Are you going, Ailba? Are you able to make it?
I can't make it down, unfortunately. And I'd love to see a game in Musgrave Park. I think the atmosphere down there would be absolutely amazing. No, unfortunately, I'll be watching on the telly this time. But it's going to be some game.
I'm guessing you're waiting until they get up to Ravenhill, Claire.
Do you know what? I've actually, before it was announced, I had already booked to go over to Scotland to watch the Ulster match the same weekend. And I'm kicking myself and I'm fuming. I'm constantly in two minds going, Duggo, I can watch Ulster anytime. Duggo doing off because it's heartbreaking. Very heartbreaking.
Isn't that kind of a problem though? Like how late the women's games are announced, you know, and the marketing doesn't kick in. Like I was talking about on Twitter about the tickets go on sale on Monday for our home games. And I was like waiting for the IRFU to market it. And just like, it's not because the men were playing. So, you know, we need to advertise that so much quicker. The likes of yourself, I'm sure there's many more people who have plans that they'd rather have not planned and rather go for a match.
It's such pity. So who's winning next week?
Oh, I'm going to go off by 5 points. I'm going to pretend I'm an optimist.
I'm going to do one better. I'm going to say 12 points.
Oh, okay.
I do think a close to full Musgrave Park will get that team over the line. It's an incredible atmosphere. The under-20s felt it there for that Grand Slam decider. So hopefully the people of Cork can fill that stadium again for the women this time. And look at that, actually, a triple crown decider, England versus Wales. Mm-hmm. So, Claire, that's gonna be you're back in Wales, I'm guessing, yeah?
No. Absolutely not. I do think it'll be a great match, but I think it'll be a great first 4 day, and then I think England's physicality will just overcome Wales, I think. I hope I'm wrong. I hope it's a really, really close, tight match, but I can just see England putting them with the post, I think, a little bit.
Yeah, I think England are just too well-versed. I think there's literally no playing style that they can't beat at their own style. Like, I think, Wales are very, very different to any team. You know, the likes of Italy that England played last week, they're chalk and cheese, but England can outplay Italy at Italy's game and outplay Wales at Wales's game. So I think I could see that Wales could probably hold their own for a short amount of time, or at least keep the score limited for a short amount of time. I don't think we're going to get a chance to see the magnificent Wales come back in the last 20 minutes. They'll be too far ahead of them at that point. I think Wales take time to build into that game.
That's what I was about to say, that how Wales start really slow and build up. Mm-hmm. You can't start slow against this English team. They're going to come out and punch you in the face. Straight away, they're going to be like, Grant, this is how we're going to play our game, and you'll have to be at that level from minute one. And if you're not, you're 20, 30 points behind before you've even realised what's going on. And the final game of the weekend is Scotland host France. Who's taking the honours there?
I think it has to be France. But I think Scotland are going to grow into this competition a bit. I think from game one to game two, we've already seen that. Which means I really fear playing them when we get to them. I think Scotland will build into it. I think Scotland will probably do better against France than we did. I think they're better holding on to the ball. Just keep the ball away from the French and they're not going to do as much damage at all. That blitz defence that they have, if they can just hold their nerve against that, they offer themselves up a platform to play back. So I think France will probably win by maybe 15 points, 20 points, but I think it'll take them a while to get there.
So really the tightest game that's going to be next week is going to be the Ireland-Italy game. That's the one actually to watch if you want the kind of
close-knit
action type of game.
I think it's going to be attritional for us, definitely.
And I do think we're going to see the effects of three big games 3 weeks in a row. Fitness will tell.
I think, if the break could come this weekend, I think it would be a huge help to regroup from France, because France just, I'd say the girls are battered and bruised. Talk about those best bruise competitions. I'd say they're all winning it this week. I think definitely our game is going to be the game of the weekend, definitely the one to watch. It's going to be a hard slog for us, but definitely going to be the tightest.
Definitely. And look, I just want to say thank you very much for both of you for coming on. Hopefully be back next week. Ailvit, where can people follow? Irish Women Supporters Club on what platforms? Where can they get you?
You can get us on Twitter at Irish Women's. You can get us on Instagram and Facebook as well. There's a quiet enough Facebook page. It's more of a little forum that a few people kind of post up. But the real action is Twitter and then across at Instagram as well. So, yeah, come on board, follow us join the club, unofficial club.
And Claire, how can everyone listen to your actually, I'm going to say this, your insightful ramblings on rugby, because you do have a good read of the game.
Agreed.
Just my normal sort of at Claire Malloy on Twitter. Twitter is really mainly the only platform that I would use for rugby or anything like that. And it's mainly just the odd serious comment, but it's mainly just jokes and funny photos every so often.
Can I just point out, Claire, that you annoy me a little bit, because every time you like one of my tweets, I'm like, oh, the Claire Malloy has liked nothing else. It's Claire. Ah, she's great.
Do you know what? I actually have people like in like my Twitter messages going, are you not playing anymore? And I'm like, that's on me. I wish it was me. It's not me. And whenever I open your name pop, I'm like, oh, I just imagine that is me.
You should just say, no, I'm too busy being a doctor. Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry.
You like the poor Will Smith from last week on Twitter.
Oh, God. Yeah. That poor man. Oh, God. Love.
Claire Elva, thanks very much for coming on. We'll be back next week talking about all the rugby. Don't forget to like, share this podcast to all the people. If you did like it, share it. If you didn't like it, share it anyways. I don't care. Yeah. Just don't tell me. So until next week, thanks again, and talk to you then. Hey! We'll be right back.